The following is a Bhakti Yoga Retreat, Session 5, Srimad Bhagavatam, First Canto, Chapter Number 5, Text Number 11. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari. Recorded on July 13, 2014, in Vail, Colorado, USA.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Tat Vak Visarga Janata Agha Viplava Yasmin Pratishlokam Abhandavativi Api Namani Anantasya Yasha Ankitani Yat Shrindvanti, Gayanti, Grinanti, Sadavaha, Tadvagvasarga Janatanga Viplavo, Yasmin Prati Shlokam Abandavat Yapi, Namanyanantasya Yashon Kitani Yat. Shrinvanti Gayanti Grananti Sadavaha Tad Vagvisargo Janatanga Viplavo Yasmin Prati Shlokam Abandhavat Yapi Namanyanantasya Yashon Kitani Yat Shrinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Sadavaha
Tat
That
Vak
Vocabulary
Visarga
Creation
Janata,
the people in general. Agha, sins.
Viplava,
revolutionary.
Yasmin,
in which.
Pratishlokam,
each and every stanza.
Abadhavati,
irregularly composed.
Api,
in spite of.
Namani,
transcendental names, etc.
Anantasya,
of the unlimited Lord.
Yashaha,
glories.
Ankitani,
depicted.
Yat,
what?
Shrinvanti,
do hear.
Gayanti,
do sing.
Grinanti,
do accept.
Sadavaha,
the purified men who are honest. On the other hand, that literature, which is full of the descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, forms, pastimes, etc., of the unlimited Supreme Lord, is a different creation, full of transcendental words directed toward bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. Purport. It is a qualification of the great thinkers to pick up even the best from the worst. It is said that the intelligent man should pick up nectar from a stock of poison, should accept gold even from a filthy place, should accept a good and qualified wife even from an obscure family, and should accept a good lesson even from a man or from a teacher who comes from the untouchables. These are some of the ethical instructions for everyone in every place, without exception. But a saint is far above the level of an ordinary man. He is always absorbed in glorifying the Supreme Lord because by broadcasting the holy name and fame of the Supreme Lord, the polluted atmosphere of the world will change, and as a result of propagating the transcendental literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam, people will become sane in their transactions. While preparing this commentation on this particular stanza of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have a crisis before us. Our neighboring friend China has attacked the border of India with a militaristic spirit. We have practically no business in the political field, yet we see that previously there were both China and India, and they both lived peacefully for centuries without ill feeling. The reason is that they lived those days in an atmosphere of God consciousness, and every country over the surface of the world was God-fearing, pure-hearted, and simple, and there was no question of political diplomacy. There is no cause of quarrel between the two countries, China and India, over land which is not very suitable for habitation, and certainly there is no cause for fighting on this issue. But due to the age of quarrel, Kali, which we have discussed, there is always a chance of quarrel on slight provocation. This is not due to the issue in question, but to the polluted atmosphere of this age. Systematically, there is propaganda by a section of people to stop glorification of the name and fame of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, there is a great need for disseminating the message of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world. It is the duty of every responsible Indian to broadcast the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the world, to do all the supermost good, as well as to bring about the desired peace in the world. Because India has failed in her duty by neglecting this responsible work, there is so much quarrel and trouble all over the world. Well, that's pretty heavy. Baba is blaming India for all the problems of the world. That's a pretty heavy accusation. It's true. We are confident that if the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam is received only by the leading men of the world, certainly there will be a change of heart, and naturally the people in general will follow them. The mass of people in general are tools in the hands of the modern politicians and leaders of the people. If there is a change of heart of leaders only, suddenly there will be a radical change in the atmosphere of the world. We know that our honest attempt to present this great literature conveying transcendental messages for reviving the God consciousness of the people in general and re-spiritualizing the world atmosphere is fraught with many difficulties. Our presenting this matter in adequate language, especially a foreign language, will certainly fail, and there will be so many literary discrepancies despite our honest attempt to present it in the proper way. But we are sure that with all our faults in this connection, the seriousness of the subject matter will be taken into consideration, and the leaders of society will still accept this due to its being an honest attempt to glorify the Almighty God. When there is a fire in a house, the inmates of the house go out to help the residents from help from the neighbors who may be foreigners, and yet without knowing the language, the victims of the fire express themselves and the neighbors understand the need, even though not expressed in the same language. The same spirit of cooperation is needed to broadcast the transcendental message of the Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the polluted atmosphere of the world. After all, it is a technical science of spiritual values, and thus we are concerned with the techniques and not with the language. If the techniques of this great literature are understood by the people of the world, there will be success. when there are too many materialistic activities by the people in general all over the world, there is no wonder that a person or a nation attacks another person or nation on slight provocation. That is the rule of this age of color or quarrel. The atmosphere is already polluted with corruption of all description, and everyone knows it well. There are so many unwanted literatures full of materialistic ideas of sense gratification. In many countries, there are bodies appointed by the state to detect and censor obscene literature. This means that neither the government nor the responsible leaders of the public want that literature, yet it is in the marketplace because the people want it for sense gratification. The people in general want to read. That is a natural instinct. But because their minds are polluted, they want such literatures. Under the circumstances, transcendental literature like Srimad Bhagavatam will not only diminish the activities of the corrupt mind of the people in general, but also it will supply food for their hankering after reading some interesting literature. In the beginning, they may not like it because one suffering from jaundice is reluctant to take sugar candy, but we should know that sugar candy is the only remedy for jaundice. Similarly, let there be systematic propaganda for popularizing reading of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, which will act like sugar candy for the jaundice-like condition of sense gratification. When men have a taste for this literature, the other literatures which are catering poison to society will then automatically cease. We are sure, therefore, that everyone in society will welcome Srimad Bhagavatam, even though it is now presented with so many faults, for it is recommended by such an authority as Sri Narada, who has very kindly appeared in this chapter.
Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jatapada Kamalam Sri Gudun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganitam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ladita Sri Vishwakam Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pachaline Nirvisheshu Shunyavadi Paschachidesha Taline.
This one word, Viplavaha, revolution, revolutionary. It's a very powerful word. There have been so many revolutions in the history of the world. There was the American Revolution, the Russian Revolution. So many revolutions are there. They're very big turning points in history. But this revolution, the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Revolution, this is the topmost of all revolutions. Because what do these other revolutions do? They simply replace one slate of rascals with another slate of rascals. That's all. The people go on suffering. That's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't buy into Gandhi's movement. Our Srila Prabhupada, as a young student, he had bought into, yeah, we got to make a revolution, get these Britishers out of India. You see? Bhaktisiddhanta knew it was not very important. These material revolutions on the material plane, they're not very significant because they don't really change anything. They may appear to change something, but it's simply a cosmetic change only. The essence of the consciousness of the people remains the same, animalistic, being dragged down into repeated birth and death. See? So we want a revolution. Why bother with a revolution if it's not revolutionary? You see what I'm saying? If it's not truly revolutionary, why are you wasting your time with it? Just like the hippies, they wanted a revolution. But what was the revolution? Increased degradation. Now everybody's having back in the 50s, sex was considered dirty and the air was clean. And now the air is dirty and sex is considered clean. Is it? It's a result of the hippie revolution, you know. Now sex is considered you know, illicit sex. There's no such thing as illicit sex anymore, practically, in the mind of the public. Anything goes is becoming the standard now in the society, you see. So if we want an actual evolution, it has to be this Bhagavatam. It has to be this Krishna bhakti. Because that will change, truly change the society. For countless millennia, the human society has been disconnected from Krishna. Especially in this Kali Yuga, totally disconnected. There's some little connection, but hardly anything left. There's a little God consciousness, but how much God consciousness is there? How much people are keen to worship God? How much people are keen to glorify God? Now they want to take "In God We Trust" off the US dollar. You see, there's some fight. The atheists are fighting. Well, I remember when I was a kid, we used to pray the Lord's Prayer every day in school. That was the standard thing, the whole school. Beginning in the homeroom, one of the students from the student Christian organization would go on the intercom system throughout the whole school. He broadcast the Lord's Prayer. So then some rascal lady from Austin, Texas, Madeline O'Hare, she thought, why does my kid have to hear this prayer? He shouldn't have to hear this prayer. So what's the solution? Ban the prayers that for millions of children throughout the whole United States can't pray anymore. Why don't they just put the kid in another room? A special silent room where he doesn't have to hear the prayer. You see, I mean, these people don't have any brains. Why not just give the kid a special room where he doesn't have to hear the prayer? But no, we're very intelligent. We're Supreme Court justices. We're very intelligent. So if this one little child doesn't have to hear the prayer, now no child in the whole country can pray. I mean, these people are so idiotic. That you can see why we need a revolution. I mean, they're completely idiots. And what is the result? Well, it used to be in high school, if you got a girl pregnant, you'd marry her. But now, get an abortion. You're a liberated woman. Women's lib, ki jai. Go get an abortion. No responsibilities, you see. So a woman has not become liberated. They become more exploited, that's all. And along with that, by kicking out God, now what is the thing that came in? Instead of G-O-D, it's G-U-N. Guns. You see? Guns and drugs. Sex, drugs, and guns infiltrated the high schools after they got rid of guns, you see. That's the great result. And they can't figure out why the kids are taking guns to school. They can't even figure it out. It's because they kicked prayer out. They can't even figure it out. They're so stupid. Such idiots. They can't figure it out. But it's so obvious. As soon as you remove the glorification of God from the atmosphere, then Kali just comes rushing in. Kali doesn't like to be where God is being glorified. He can't stand it. He stays away from such places, you see. But as soon as you kick out God, Kali is in ecstasy. Ah, now I can come in and I can completely take over, you see. There's no more worship of God here. So how desperately this planet needs this revolution of Krishna consciousness. How desperately. And Prabhupada's very positive, actually. If you see some of these statements that Prabhupada has made, it's very encouraging. Prabhupada is saying there can be a radical change in the atmosphere of the world. It's not like an impossibility. Difficult, yes, but impossible, no. What did Prabhupada tell us in Los Angeles? Impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. So take out your dictionary and scratch out, not literally, but we're making it a poetic metaphor here. Take out your dictionary and scratch out the word impossible from your dictionary. You see. Because our mission is to revolutionize this planet. by propagating the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Some devotees say, oh, it's not possible, don't even think about it, but that's not Prabhupada's philosophy. Prabhupada makes a very nice statement in the Bhagavatam. He says, he actually defines a Krishna conscious being. Before I just tell you what he said, first I'd like to inquire of him, what is the name of our movement? The International Society for Krishna Consciousness, right? So what does that mean? The members are supposed to be Krishna conscious, right? So we are supposed to be, as members of ISKCON, we are supposed to be Krishna conscious beings by dint of the fact that we're members of the Society for Krishna Conscious Beings. Isn't it? So now Prabhupada describes what is the mentality of a Krishna conscious being so we can all analyze how much are we truly ISKCONites or not. Are we ISKCON all the way into the depths of our heart, or are we just superficially ISKCON? Prabhupada describes in what is the actual mentality of a Krishna conscious being. One of these glorious purports. He said, Prabhupada said, a Krishna conscious being is always thinking how to deliver the suffering humanity. That's his constant meditation. How can I deliver the people of this world back to Krishna consciousness? That's his constant meditation. He lives constantly, and he wakes up in the morning. What can I do today to push forward this movement, you see? How can I become more Krishna conscious, to become more potent for spreading this movement? Every day, that's how he wakes up. His whole day, he's enwrapped in that consciousness, you see. He's fully absorbed in thinking how he can deliver the suffering humanity. Now, you might say, well, that must be a pretty frustrating life, because how frustrated he may be that, well, I only made 2 devotees in the last 20 years, you know. Someone may say, oh, that's a very frustrating, how could you even bother thinking that way, because you'd be so depressed seeing that you're not really doing as, the world hasn't changed much at all. It's even getting worse. So one may think, maybe I should kind of ignore that instruction of Srila Prabhupada because it could be pretty discouraging. But then here's what Prabhupada says. So it's not really discouraging. Here's what he says. A Krishna conscious being is always thinking how to deliver all of suffering humanity, and even if he is not successful, his success is guaranteed. And anyone who follows him will also be successful. So there you go, you see. You can meditate on saving the world as your mission, given to you by Srila Prabhupada. And it doesn't matter if you succeed or fail, because by that meditation, your success is guaranteed. And anybody you can influence to follow this movement, you see, they will also be successful. So it's one of the most revolutionary statements that Prabhupada makes in his books. How important does Prabhupada feel this particular verse is? I mean, there's 18,000 verses, and there's so many purports. How important is it? Well, if you look in the preface of the Bhagavatam, the preface for the entire 12 cantos, yes. In that preface, which is a very brief preface of only 2 and just barely over 2 pages, in that preface, Prabhupada mentions 2 Bhagavatam verses. You can put it on the board, on the screen. And this is one of those 2 verses. So Prabhupada, even before you get to the 5th chapter, if you read the Bhagavatam, when you read the preface, you'll read this verse. That's how important this verse is. It's put right there in the preface of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we have to be revolutionary devotees. That is the meaning of Goshti Anandi. You see, the Bhajan Anandi just wants to practice for himself. But the revolutionary devotee, the one who wants to push for this movement and save the fallen souls of this planet, you see, he understands this verse, 1.5.11 of Bhagavatam, and he implements it. That we have a mission given by the spiritual master. It's coming down. This is our family business, to make a revolution on this planet. So let me accept my duty to propagate Krishna consciousness wherever I have the opportunity. Whomever you meet, instruct him in the teachings of Krishna. In this way, on my order, you become guru and deliver the people of this planet. So you're ordered to become gurus. That's the order of Lord Chaitanya. A guru, what does he mean? Someone who is heavy with Vedic knowledge, who can deliver the fallen souls back to home, back to Godhead, by engaging them in Krishna consciousness, purely. So, are there any questions? The papers went out. All right, the first question here. You mentioned that yoga practices can be covered in bhakti yesterday. Will you speak more about this? Asana practice become a form of bhakti yoga. Yeah, we have a very nice yogic asana we do. It's called Dandavat Asana. Mm-hmm. We fell down like a stick at the lotus feet of our spiritual master and Krishna and beg for their mercy. And actually the yogic idea, just like sitting in a yogic way with a nice posture, sitting erect, this is actually conducive for hearing. We're not used to sitting so well, but actually if you take the half lotus or a full lotus and sit like that in the Bhagavatam class, it really can help you pay attention. So there's two things, Dandavat Asana and the lotus or half lotus asanas are very good. You can be very nicely used in Krishna consciousness. As far as all these other asanas, if you want to do them for health, I know one time I had a very bad, had a horrible backache. I tried so many things and nothing worked. I went to the chiropractor, nothing worked, and then I did a couple of yoga, the bridge pose and the fish pose, boom, finished. And wiped it out immediately. Immediately cured it. So yoga is good. One of my godbrothers, he was Prabhupada's personal servant. He would do yogic asanas, and Prabhupada approved of them. So it's not that Prabhupada instituted in our society that now, you know, after Bhagavatam we have, now it's time for the Hatha Yoga. It wasn't instituted, but devotees who were doing it on their own, Prabhupada didn't at all. He mentions it's good for the health in his books, and he had no objection to any devotees who were practicing yoga, the Hatha Yoga. But he made it very clear, in this age you're not going to get self-realization. You can't. It's not possible. Actually, in any age, as we read in the Bhagavad, in the Brahma Samhita yesterday, simply by asanas and, you know, pranayama, pratyahara, dhanana, the eightfold pathway, the ashtanga system, it'll take you millions of years to actually achieve perfection. And then, even then, you're still on the outskirts of the spiritual world. So it's not that we're going to try to amalgamate and make a new hybrid, you know, Ashtanga Bhakti Dash Yoga, a new improved type of Bhakti Yoga that is Ashtang Bhakti. We're not going to do that. It's not, that would be a concoction. It's not necessary. Krishna says, Yogi nam api sarvesham mangatena tadatmana shiravam ujjache yomang samayukta tamo mataha. Of all the yogis, this is Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, text number 47. He says, of all the yogis, the one who worships me, the devotee, the bhakti yogi, he is the highest, he is intimately connected with me, and he is the highest of all yogis. So we don't need to modify what Krishna has given. Simply by this bhakti process, all perfection will be there. Some people they had a stroke or something, they're incapacitated, they can't do Hatha Yoga at all or Ashtanga Yoga. Not possible. They can do bhakti. Bhakti is a universal yoga that everyone can do. This is a good question. How can I meditate on saving the world if I can't even save myself? Well, you better save yourself. It's obvious. How do you do that? The steps are given by Rupa Goswami. If you want to, this is in the Nectar of Devotion, Chapter 6, How to Discharge Devotional Service. You want to save yourself? Here's the. There's 64 items, but I'll give you the first 10, which is the most important to get going on in the process. The first thing, you have to take shelter of a spiritual master. You have to. You try to do it on your own, you're just wasting your time. Oh, I don't need a guru. I'm just going to practice on my own. I tried that for a while. And devotees said, they called me Steve Prabhu because I earned the title Prabhu by distributing 10 Back to Godhead magazines. I got a title Prabhu. Steve Prabhu. Krishna said, you say you just want to be a devotee of Krishna, not a disciple of Prabhupada, but Krishna says you have to accept a spiritual master. Don't you see this verse? Tadvidi pranipatena. And so I was pretty stubborn, but eventually I realized it, that I was missing out on the nectar. Because devotees had this feeling, this love for Prabhupada. They were tasting such ecstasy and giving their hearts to Srila Prabhupada. See, I wasn't giving my heart to Prabhupada. And they, I could see they were tasting so much nectar by giving their hearts to Srila Prabhupada. And I was like a wallflower at the party. I was missing out on the nectar. So I realized, being an envious person, I said, I'm not going to let these devotees taste nectar. I'm not going to let them taste nectar that I don't get to taste. So I will also give my heart to Prabhupada so I can also taste the nectar too. So the first thing is you have to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Then after shelter, what's the next thing? Initiation, right? And then after initiation, do you have to follow the spiritual master's order, or it's optional? You have to follow. There's shelter, initiation, follow. Obey. Yeah, the same principle. Shelter, initiation, obey. And then, under the guidance of your spiritual master, he engages you in following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. In other words, he's not some standalone entity, a self-made guru. He's simply a representative of a tradition. He simply represents a tradition. So he engages you in following Srila Prabhupada perfectly. That's his service. Spiritual masters, in ISKCON, the guru's duty is to make you a perfect servant of Srila Prabhupada, you see. That's the fourth item. He engages you in following the footsteps of the previous acharyas. And then, how do you get yourself aligned with this acharya marg that we're following, the sadhu marg? You have to inquire. You have to, inquiring. How can I improve? How can I overcome this difficulty? So you inquire from the spiritual master. And then the sixth item is to be prepared to give up anything that you would not like to give up, or accept something you would not like to accept. The seventh item is to reside in a holy place, or to make your residence into a holy place by making Krishna the center. That's the seventh item. The eighth item is to accept only what is necessary for Krishna consciousness. Don't engage in the material world any more than is required for, maintenance, earning your living, staying healthy. Then the ninth item is to observe a codicil. Simply that means no grains and beans on a codicil. That's a codicil. You shouldn't take any grains or any beans, because sin personified takes, it's such a holy day, sin personified takes residence in grain, even if it's pashadam, he takes residence in grains and beans on a codicil, so you don't eat, you get polluted by sin if you eat grains or beans on a codicil. You don't have to do a nirjal. Even on nirjal is not required. Although traditionally every Ekadasi is nirjal. Every Ekadasi, not just nirjal Ekadasi. Every single Ekadasi is actually nirjal. No eating, no water, no sleeping. That's tradition. That's Prabhupada told us in Dallas, but he never told us we had to do that. In fact, he introduced Ekadasi as a feast day. When I joined ISKCON, every Ekadasi was a fill. It's Ekadasi feast today. Fried peanuts, carrot halva, some kind of potato prep. That was a feast on every Ekadasi. No one observed Nirjalakat at all when Prabhupada was present. That was introduced after Prabhupada left the planet. It's nice. I do it every year. It gets easier every year. And actually, my favorite prasadam every year is that breakfast. My wife makes a really good breakfast. She takes milk, 50% with water and honey. That's the ultimate prasadam every year after Nirjala Ekadasi, the Ekadasi breakfast. So that's the ninth item observed of Ekadasi. And the tenth item is to worship the Tulsi tree. So if you will do these 10 things, you see, take shelter of a guru, get initiated, obey him, follow the previous acharyas under his direction, inquire how to get yourself properly aligned with the acharyas, be prepared to accept anything material, spiritual, to reject anything material in the service of the Lord, reside in it, make your place of residence a holy place, or live in Vrindavan, deal with the material world only insofar as is necessary, observe Ekadasi and worship Tulsi. If you'll do these 10 items, you're going to be very solidly fixed in this process. And that's how you can save yourself, by following these items very seriously. Don't write any more questions. We don't have time. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that he is the cause of everything, but he is not responsible for repercussions living entity undergoes in material existence. For aspiring devotees who are living in the current world of chaos and quarrel, it is easy to understand the cause of this sorry state of affairs. But when quarrel, hypocrisy, and deception or an atmosphere of unappreciation is rampant in a Vaishnava society, how can one see that it is not due to Krishna's doing? Prabhupada mentions this. Actually, even when he was here, there was a lot of chaotic things happening in our society that Prabhupada always had to rectify. That's why he created the GBC, so they could relieve him from this burden. He could focus on translating. There was the Gopi Bhava Club that came up in LA. That was the whole thing. Prabhupada had to smash that. The Sahaja movement. At one time there was a whole contamination back in 1970 to minimize Prabhupada's position. Even the use of the name Prabhupada was questioned by some. The God brothers poisoned some of our devotees, and this poison entered, a subtle poison entered ISKCON. And it was very disturbing to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada had to deal with that, and Krishna, even when Prabhupada was here, there was so many things that had to be dealt with. And after Prabhupada left, that first decade was a very rough ride. Any of you who were here at that time will remember. Because we weren't used to not having Prabhupada here, and we had to learn how to do it in his absence. And it was a very, very trying decade. The 80s were a very, very rough ride for our society. Prabhupada actually states in his books that when the Acharya comes, he creates order, and when he leaves, then disorder comes. So the sincere followers of him, they must, endeavor to rectify the situation. So it's happened now. There's so many sincere devotees in our society who've just given their whole life to make this movement successful, and now we see how it's expanding and mushrooming in so many wonderful ways. The temple of understanding that Prabhupada said we should build is coming up in Mayapur. It's so beautiful. We have, things are in Russia, an amazing expansion of devotees, in China, so many things, wonderful things are happening all over the world. So, there is chaos going on. It's a hospital. What do you expect? This is a hospital for spiritually diseased people. You can expect some disease in the hospital. It's natural there's going to be chaos, some disease here in this hospital, because that's why it's there. It's the people come who are diseased with lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, envy. They come here to get cured. Are they cured instantly? No, it takes time. It takes many years. It takes decades to actually get these subtle dirts out of the heart. Decades and decades and decades to really make serious inroads into getting rid of lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. But it does work. If you stick it out, you give your life to this process, you'll be very delighted to see the results as you actually you feel and experience how you're maturing in Krishna consciousness. So I don't know if I directly answered this question, but it inspired a whole an answer that covered some points that are very important for us to know and understand. Krishna facilitates us if we want to be rascals, but it's not his fault that we're rascals. It's our foolishness. If we want to do nonsense, he facilitates it. Just like a parent, the child may be fascinated, you see, seeing people smoking cigarettes. And he thinks, you know, I'd really like to try smoking cigarettes. Instead of the father letting the kid smoke cigarettes with some of the kids at school, he says, I see that you're fascinated by cigarettes. Here, I'll let you try one. The father facilitates him. So the son, in an improved way, is not that he's, you know, some behind a dark alley somewhere, you know, defying his authorities, but the father facilitates, all right, you can try this cigarette and see how you like it. And he realizes this is no good. And he never thinks about smoking after that. He had that desire, that power facilitated him to help him get over it, actually. So Krishna facilitates our sinful desires, our envious desires, to help us get over them. That's the actual purpose. If Kali only comes where the Lord is not glorified, then why are there sometimes strong disagreements in a devotee community? Because we're not Krishna conscious enough. There's too many gaps in our Krishna consciousness. That's why. You see? If we're not Krishna conscious at every minute, Kali is just waiting. Sometimes devotees fight. Prabhupada had to say, don't fight amongst yourself. You see? If you let down your guard and you don't keep Krishna in the forefront of your consciousness, Kali can come right in. And if two devotees do it, then there's potential for a fight. Regarding Ashtanga Bhakti, just as a karmi can engage the fruits of their labor in the propensities of Krishna consciousness, in their propensities in Krishna consciousness, what if a person whose dharmic work was already yoga and bringing people to spiritual life, even before knowing of God as Krishna? And that's great. Just like somebody may have been a yoga practitioner, they were a yoga teacher, and now they've become, just like I have a student in South America, she has been running a yoga studio for many years, you see. So I say, well, now you're becoming Krishna conscious, close your studio and just chant. No. Keep doing it, and you can introduce your yoga students to mantra yoga, you see. So, in fact, when Prabhupada was on the planet, two of our sannyasis, or maybe it was just one of them, he was actually teaching Hatha Yoga to some members of the Shah of Iran's family. Of course, that there was a revolution and they were completely kicked out. But at one point, the royal family, one of our sannyasis, I think it was Paramahamsa Maharaj, he's now gone from our movement, but he was teaching Hatha Yoga to the royal family of Iran. It's quite a nice inroad, you see. Teach some Hatha Yoga, introduce some Bhakti. I remember when Tamal Krishna Maharaj first went to China, Chinese are very atheistic people. So he was thinking how to introduce Krishna consciousness to these Chinese people. They're so atheistic. They can't even understand God at all. It's like incomprehensible to them. So they started a whole Hatha, under the guidance of Tamal Krishna Goswami, he is a brilliant strategist. There was a whole Hatha Yoga thing that gradually introduced bhakti, and it was very successful. It made many devotees in Hong Kong by this strategy. So, our time has now run out, and we've gotten a lot of nectar here together in what has become for us a holy place by the din of all this glorification of Krishna, Prasadam, Kirtan, devotee association. So this is actually the formula for peace, you see, to put God back in the center. Ishavashamidam sarvam yatkincham jagajagam tena chiktena bunjeta magrida kashasvidhanam. Everything animate or inanimate that is in the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. And therefore, one should accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, knowing well to whom everything belongs. So by introducing this, by coming to this Ishavasha or God-centered conception, then there's perfect peace. So what we've done here today, now we have to carry this spirit wherever we go, make Krishna the center of our consciousness, that I'm not acting for my own desires, I'm acting now to satisfy Krishna in every situation. How can I satisfy Krishna? And how can I satisfy Krishna's representative, my spiritual master? By putting Krishna the center in this way, the wonderful peace and happiness we've experienced here at this super enlivening Bhakti Yoga retreat can carry on, and we can have an eternal Bhakti Yoga retreat wherever we are, you see. So we thank you all very much, and we'll stop here. Gandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.